Hello, everybody. This podcast is a part of the Saskatchewan Podcast Network, and that's supported by Sask Energy. Make sure to protect your home from carbon monoxide poisoning and install an alarm today. CO is created through combustion or the burning process and can be toxic when inhaled. Flu-like symptoms, headaches, and dizziness are all signs of CO poisoning. Make sure to have an alarm on every floor of your home and check your vents and chimney regularly for debris. Never idle a vehicle in a garage and have your burning fuel appliances inspected annually. If you think your home has carbon monoxide, leave your home immediately. Call 911 or your local fire department. Visit saskenergy.com for more information on carbon monoxide. Whether you're a musician, an author, a poet, a designer, a sculptor, or even a painter, one problem seems to be in common for all creatives. At some point in time, you're going to experience a creative slowdown. Call it what you will, writer's block, resistance, a lack of inspiration or motivation, at the end of the day, all it is the loss of ability to produce your art. In 2014, Justin Bieber was planning to reinvent his career. He had gone through a well-publicized series of misbehaviors, including being arrested for DUI. By the time he turned 22, he started to realize he wasn't a kid anymore. He needed to grow up. As he took a step back, he knew he needed to grow out of his teeny bop phase and release an album that would reflect his new outlook on life. Just as Michael Jackson grew out of his teen star Jackson 5 persona to produce Off the Wall and Thriller, Justin knew he couldn't be the bull-haired cute kid singing Baby anymore. To help make his Thriller, Justin called upon one of the most celebrated and critically acclaimed producers in modern music, Rick Rubin. Rick first came on the scene as the founder of Def Jam Records in the 80s, producing artists such as the Beastie Boys and LL Cool J. Through the years, he has produced everyone from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, to Johnny Cash, to Tom Petty, to Jay-Z, to Slayer. His producing style is very hands-off. His goal is to bring out the best of his artists he produces, to let them explore their creativity on their own, and offer suggestions along the way. If they're trucking along great, he doesn't say much, but Rick's genius is when that truck comes to a halt. Normally, the artists that work with Rick come into the recording process with a bunch of ideas and half-written songs, but Justin wanted to go into their time together with a clean slate. He wanted to write in the studio and see what they could come up with together, along with a random selection of professional studio-type musicians. This was out of Rick's comfort zone, but you don't produce Blood Sugar Sex Magik, Rain in Blood, or 99 Problems without knowing how to work out of your comfort zone. He knew Justin was at a creative slowdown, experiencing writer's block, so he had an idea. As they all gathered in the studio, Rick played the role of a DJ. He was playing everyone all these old classic pop albums. He was playing Hall & Oates, he was playing Chic, and knowing Justin wanted to make his Thriller, he was playing Michael Jackson. As Rick would play these classics, he'd tell the musicians to learn them on the spot. They'd take 5 or 10 minutes to copy what they were hearing and play it once or twice. Then Rick would say, okay, now learn it in a different key. The musicians would then learn it again as quick as they could and play it back once or twice. Then Rick would say, okay, now learn it in this different tempo. Again, they take a few minutes to speed things up or slow it all down. Then Rick would offer a different instruction. He would say, okay, now don't play it, but play something that's like that, something similar. Forget what you just learned, but keep it in your subconscious. Don't remember any specifics, but remember that feel. And then Rick would instruct the engineer to hit record. It's all these random exercises that makes Rick a genius. You'd assume that the exercise would be something common Rick does with certain bands and artists, but when looking back in that memory recently, he said no, that was probably the first and only time he's done that. He knows how to read a room with different artists and bands, what they need to elevate their creative genius to get past writer's block. In 2001, Rick Rubin wasn't working with a polished pop star in Justin Bieber, but an Armenian-American alternative metal band, System of a Down. Although you wouldn't think there'd be very many similarities, they were experiencing the same thing Justin was as they struggled to find lyrics to this bridge part of one of their songs. They had the verses and this provocative chorus about self-righteous suicide, but for some reason they were at a standstill near the finish line of the song. Rick witnessed this firsthand and quickly went into action. He suggested they all take a break and go to his house for lunch. Rick had this large, beautiful library in his house, and while the rest of the band ate lunch, he told singer and songwriter Serge Tankian to just pick any book out of the library, go to a random page, and see if anything will inspire you. Serge was skeptical, but he did just that. He grabbed the first book that caught his eye, he flipped to a page, and randomly pointed his finger to a section. Immediately, the words, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit," jumped out at him. With the song and most of the words already in his mind, a light bulb went off in Serge's head. The song with the working title, "Suicide," could actually be about religion. He never looked at the lyrics from that Christian perspective before, but this new line kind of tied the theme all together. Serge has since said that all he can do is credit the universe for writing that bridge. And that bridge would be a main part of arguably their defining song in their entire catalog. It would eventually become Chop Suey, the first single released from one of the biggest and most influential albums in heavy metal history. It's their 2001 classic, Toxicity.
The stories behind some of the most famous albums in music history. It's Beyond the Beat with Jared Lennon.
On September 3rd, 2001, System of a Down were due to play a free show in the band's hometown of Los Angeles. It was one day ahead of the release of the band's second studio album, Toxicity, and the four members wanted to do something as a way of giving thanks to their fans. System of a Down had moderate success with their debut self-titled album 3 years prior, but they weren't looked at as heavy metal pioneers quite yet, more like this small-time, quirky, obscure metal band. Or so the band members thought. As they prepared to promote Toxicity, the clues would start to pile on that things were picking up steam. Organizers of the free show expected no more than 5,000 fans to show up. Instead, a number closer to 15,000 flooded the vacant parking lot. In a state of panic and fear over safety concerns, the fire marshal in charge decided to shut it down. He wouldn't allow System of a Down to perform. The band asked the authorities to let them at least address the crowd and fill them in on what was going on, but they were given a hard no. Some of these kids had slept on the dirt floor overnight just to be close to the stage, and now it was all canceled. The announcement was made to the crowd of anxious fans, and as soon as the band's stage banner came down, all hell broke loose. The kids went crazy, destroying the band's equipment and gear. The band had to be rushed to a nearby hotel by police escort, and the scene descended into a full-blown riot. Towers of amps were toppled into the crowd, and people could be seen through swirls of tear gas smashing everything in sight. As riots normally go, the violence was contagious, and it was reported that store and car windows were being smashed as far as 7 blocks away. When all was said and done, 6 fans were arrested, several officers and fans were treated for minor injuries, and it was estimated the damage to be in the $30,000 range. It was a fucked up situation, but all signs were pointing to System of a Down as a band poised to explode. As the guys arrived at the hotel, they turned on the news, and it seemed like every channel was reporting on these Hollywood riots. The pictures of the band were being displayed across the screen, adding that the riot came out of a free show to promote their new album, Toxicity, due for release the next day. What's better press than that? Most bands are easy to categorize. You have a hard rock band or a metal band or jazz or whatever. If you listen to a few songs of most bands, you get the gist and pretty much know how everything else will sound. Then there's System of a Down. 4 guys from Los Angeles, California, all with deep roots in Armenian heritage, playing a unique style of alternative metal with hints of their Middle Eastern background, folk, prog rock, jazz, and even Greek. They have a playfulness and a sense of humor to their music that's seemingly un-American, nothing like their counterparts in a genre rock critics try to lump them into in nu metal. Yet this cloud of humor hovering above all their music is incensed with the seriousness of geopolitics and philosophy. Bassist Shavo Odadjian describes them as a cross between Pink Floyd and Slayer. As Rolling Stone magazine puts it, if System of a Down ain't Noam Chomsky, it sure ain't Limp Bizkit's Nookie either. When System of a Down released their self-titled debut 3 years previously, the world didn't quite know what to make of them, but the unpredictability, the circus-like style to the band, drew in a lot of local attention, and it's what made them so attractive and such a hit on the Sunset Strip in LA's music scene as they were coming up in the early to mid-90s. and it's how they got their big break, by catching the ear of Rick Rubin. Rick sat down for an interview recently and talked about first seeing System of a Down at a 200-person sold-out Viper Room show in LA, saying, quote, "I remember watching the show and just laughing. I laughed the whole time. It was the funniest thing I had ever seen, but in a good way. It wasn't like laughing like, what a joke. It was just so over the top and so extreme. And like Armenian folk dancing with heavy metal riffs and wild political lyrics and screaming, it was crazy music. And usually a lot of heavy music falls into a similar thing. I'm not going to say it's interchangeable because it's not, but there's certain rules of heavy metal, let's say, that sort of everyone follows those rules. And System of a Down, you could say, were a heavy metal band who didn't follow those rules. They didn't have the rhythms that you'd hear in a typical... You wouldn't hear a Metallica rhythm. You'd hear a System of a Down rhythm, which was different, like different gallops. It's rooted in their Armenian heritage, so they took elements from folk music and brought that into heavy metal. And I remember at the time, I had never heard anything like it." Rubin continued on saying not everyone around the scene shared his excitement, saying, quote, "I can remember people, while there was those of us who loved them fanatically, people hated them. People hated them. I can remember the big radio station in LA is K-Rock, and Kevin Weatherly is the program director of K-Rock, and I remember him saying, System of a Down is a band we will never play on our station ever. 100%, I don't care what happens. Doesn't fit on our station." And then a year later, it was the number one band on the station. They clearly didn't fit, but they were so good that they transcended not fitting. And those are the artists I like the best. Those are my favorite artists, the ones that they don't really fit anywhere. They're not another in this mold. After that Viper Room show, Rubin happily offered the band a record deal. However, by that time, System of a Down had plans to sign with Universal. The band members sat on it for a while and kept meeting with Universal, but after going into their offices multiple times and getting to know them, they realized Universal seemed to be focused on more of a hip-hop R&B direction. As Darren would later say, they knew Rick believed in them, and they knew he was a music producer that went with his gut instinct, not on following any trends. They signed with Rick's American Recordings label in 1997. In March 2001, System of a Down entered Cello Studios with Rick to record the songs. They would end up spending the next 4 months on the record, much longer than their debut album. They wanted to experiment more and progress past a band that seemed to be mostly focused on the heavier side of their music, what they thought their debut sounded like. Guitarist Darren Malakian talked about that time in an interview, saying, quote, "Going into it, I knew Serge wanted to sing more, so I guess that was kind of a progression and an evolution for the band. I wanted to do all of that, yet not lose the heaviness of the band, and I guess the hard punk metal aspect. You could lose that sometimes when you get a little too eclectic. So we were just trying to balance that fine line and not lose the fans." Toxicity would end up being released on September 3rd, 2001. And if you have a pulse, you'll know that particular time frame has some significance. Much like the riot that resulted out of their free show in Los Angeles, it appeared from the outset that System of a Down couldn't catch a break when it came to external circumstances out of their control. 1 week after the release of the sophomore album, 9/11 happened. The events on September 11th changed the world forever, and feeling like they got away with creating something positive out of a terrible event out of that LA riot, it now looked like they couldn't catch a break. Music and art was quite impacted from the events of 9/11. People were on edge and seemingly weren't in the mood for what could be looked at as anti-American sentiments or heavy taboo topics like the one System of a Down touched on in most of their music. Their lead single, released a month prior to 9/11, talked about suicide. Talk about the wrong place at the wrong time. It was placed on radio operator Clear Channel's list of lyrically questionable songs and effectively removed from the playlists of more than 1,000 US stations. But just like that riot, System of a Down's momentum seemed to be unstoppable at this point. Just as Rick Rubin mentioned in that interview, when a band is this good, they transcend releasing music at the wrong time. In fact, some people thought their lead single about self-righteous suicide was almost like a prognostication of 9/11, leading to more publicity and more press on the band. That song, of course, is the one Serge was able to finish writing after looking in one of Rick Rubin's books. It's Chop Suey. When it comes to writing a System of a Down song, Darren usually writes the music, while it's usually a collaboration between Darren and Serge on the lyrical side. Darren wrote the music to Chop Suey, just messing around on an acoustic guitar, while in the back of the band's RV, while on tour to support their debut album. They were excited to be on tour, but wanted to prove they were capable of writing songs with more musical depth than what was on their debut. Darren has said he was going into the toxicity writing process, not wanting to write another Pluck or Sweet Pea, but while also keeping with a System of a Down style. Chop Suey is a great showcase of what System of a Down offers. The verses are frantic and hard, yet still playful. It's both difficult to sing and arguably difficult to listen to. And then the chorus is this big, soaring, emotional, and melodic piece. It goes back and forth between crazy, rhythmic explosions into emotional, anthemic melodies. Bassist Shavo Adagian said in an interview, quote, "This song is named Chop Suey because that's really what we are musically. To me, it's about drug addiction, but we've taken something really serious and made it a little quacky." After a jangly acoustic guitar and tribal drums open the song, the first verse opens like a gut punch, as if Serge is narrating the morning routine of the song's character, singing, "Wake up, grab a brush and put on a little makeup, hide the scars to fade away the shakeup. Why'd you leave the keys upon the table? Here you go, create another fable." The lyrics, coupled with the aggression of Serge's delivery, signals that the character is in disarray from the shakeup the night before. It can mean a domestic dispute, it can mean self-harm, or even drug addiction, as Shavo says. The makeup literally hiding the physical scars, but also metaphorically a denial of the so-called shakeup even happening. They're putting on a facade to go about their day-to-day life, and then seeing the carelessness of the keys being left on the table, the character regrets everything that happened the night before. The verse then repeats with the same lyrics, but the second time around, every line ends with a callback, "You wanted to." It's like the character is in conflict with him or herself, in their head asking why they continue doing these destructive behaviors, while also understanding it's their own fault. It's like the angel and devil on your shoulder. The chorus then slows the song down with a feeling of remorse and sadness, with, "I don't think you trust in my self-righteous suicide. I cry when angels deserve to die." Darren explained the chorus in an interview, saying, quote, "The song is about how we are regarded differently depending on how we pass. Everyone deserves to die. Like if I were now to die from drug abuse, they might say I deserved it because I abused drugs. Hence the line, I cry when angels deserve to die." As Darren says, the character is looking at society and the way killing yourself is portrayed in such a negative light. In religions like Christianity, suicide is actually a sin and will prevent you from entering heaven in the afterlife. The character knows this, but struggles internally because they can't help but feel suicide would be a blessing. The hopelessness this person feels crescendos in the bridge and the anthemic ending. The person is looking to the sky at God, angry. It ties the song together with the Christian theme, as Serge realized when he encountered these words in Rick's book. "Father, Father, Father, into your hands I commend my spirit. Father, into your hands, why have you forsaken me? In your eyes, forsaken me. In your thoughts, forsaken me. In your heart, forsaken me." In the Bible, Luke chapter 23, verse 46, Jesus Christ speaks his last words on the cross, calling out, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." In Chop Suey, the character is sending out a cry for help, asking for God to take away the pain, but also questioning God, feeling like they have been left to suffer. Chop Suey was the first single off Toxicity, released August 13th, 2001. It was originally titled Suicide, but the record company made them change it to be more radio-friendly. In the beginning of the song, you can hear Serge even saying, "We're rolling suicide." Of course, Chop Suey being a play on words as well, chopping suicide, but also describing the band as a mix of all these influences and styles. The single was climbing the charts before kind of being silenced by the events of 9/11. Just about every radio station pulled it from their playlists in an effort to be as sensitive as possible after the tragedy. Even though the song had nothing to do with terrorism, it was considered far too aggressive. When things settled down, though, the song returned to the airwaves pretty much where it left off, since there weren't too many songs released in the weeks after 9/11. It would eventually lead to the band's first Grammy nomination for Best Metal Performance in 2002. Rick Rubin later talked about Chop Suey and how they employed their unique style with the song, saying, quote, "The fact that it became a hit is really unusual because it's such bizarre music. I was shocked when Serge first sang the verse to me. It's like, you really want this to be the verse? And he's like, yeah, he loved it. And it holds up. You have no perspective on something like this the first time you hear it. But the thing is, that's so exciting about the band is how they take these unusual ideas and execute them on a high level. They can take something that seems really awkward and convey it in a way where you can see it as beautiful. It forces you to open your mind." The roots of System of a Down trace back to 1992. Darren Malakian and Serge Tankian were working on separate projects at the same recording studio one day, and by total chance, met up and started talking. It turned out they both went to the same elementary school as kids, the Rose and Alex Bilbo's Armenian school, and obviously shared the same Armenian heritage. Because Serge was 8 years older, though, they never knew each other. They quickly formed a band called Soil, with Serge on vocals and keyboards, and Darren on vocals and guitar. They found a bassist and a drummer, and it wasn't long after where the band became much more than just a hobby. They hired a business manager to help with their day-to-day affairs and navigate the complicated LA rock scene, a guy by the name of Shavo Adagian. But in 1994, after only one show and one jam session recording, the drummer and bassist left. Serge and Darren weren't ready to see their music dream die, so they decided to rebrand and rename. They liked their business manager so much, they made Shavo an addition to the band on bass. And they found a drummer who had played in a band with Darren as teenagers. Inspired by a piece of poetry put together by Darren, they decided to call themselves Victims of a Down. Serge and Darren believed it was a good name, but it was Shavo that convinced them to change it to System of a Down. System would probably have a better commercial appeal, plus it would put them closer in a musical catalog to their metal heroes in Slayer. Now all they needed was new original music. Early on, there was a recurring theme of unreleased material. Reportedly, two entire EPs went unreleased. Eventually, their first demo came out in 1996, followed by a second in 97. It was around then they were writing and preparing to record their first full album when their drummer punched a wall and broke his hand. They were having personal issues with him anyway, so they hardly hesitated to call a friend of theirs, John Dolmayan, to replace him. Early on, System of a Down's strategy was to perform as much as possible. They were relentless, performing in clubs around the Sunset Strip like the Viper Room and the Whiskey a Go-Go. They were desperate to attract major label attention, but as Darren later said in an interview, they were given a label as a local act that wouldn't sell anywhere else, saying, quote, "System of a Down is rarely played in an empty venue. I think we're a little spoiled when it comes to that. We played with a lot of bigger bands in LA, so within a year or two, people recognized that what we were doing was unique and different. At that time, the record labels didn't want to sign us yet, but we had a huge following in the city that people still talk about to this day." Darren continues, saying, quote, "The labels were reluctant to sign us because they didn't think a huge following on the Sunset Strip would translate to us finding an audience in Texas or in some parts of Europe. They thought we wouldn't be understood. I had all sorts of people offering me advice on how to change our music so we'd get signed, but I was convinced we were doing the right thing, and bands who didn't have anything like our following were getting signed, but they were white and non-Armenian. We waited our turn, though, and it worked out okay." Hard work finally paid off through that constant drive to perform when it finally got the attention of Rick Rubin. They were signed to his label and in June of 1998 released their debut self-titled album. It had moderate success, peaking at 124 on the Billboard 200. Songs like Sugar and Spiders would help get them mainstream airplay on MTV, and they would go on to tour the world in support of acts like Metallica and their heroes and Slayer. The album eventually went gold in February of 2000 and received a significant bump after the success of Toxicity, ultimately going platinum. With their first album, you hear a much more rough around the edges new metal hard rock sound with influences such as jazz in there as well. Serge's voice was described as barked punk-inspired vocals segueing into heartfelt nasal melodies. John's jazzy drumming pairs excellent with the metal riffs of Darren Malakian. It's a mix of catchy metal politics and a band not taking themselves too seriously, creating a perfect blend of performance. The two singles and standouts, as I said, were Sugar and Spiders, both a sign of things to come as the band got more dynamic with Toxicity. Spiders is an examination of governmental control as weighed through 1984-style science fiction. Sugar shows off the dynamic of the band between traditional alternative metal singing Darren and the more operatic and aggressive punk shouts of Serge. The cover of their debut album also showed they weren't just any regular heavy metal band. The artwork is an outstretched hand with a black background and stems from a 1928 anti-fascist poster for the Communist Party of Germany at the time. The text on the original poster read, "A hand has five fingers. With these five, grab the enemy." The slogan inspired System of a Down to write text on the back of their debut album, "The hand has five fingers, capable and powerful, with the ability to destroy as well as to create." Artists are generally known for being idealistic when it comes to politics, for having grand ideals for world peace, but some take it further. At its worst, the mix of music and politics can result in simplistic songs that sound smug and self-righteous. At its best, the same mix can produce timeless music that inspires and provokes, be it the stirring civil rights anthems like We Shall Overcome or Bob Dylan's The Times They Are A-Changin'. Even just lately, System released their first new music in more than a decade to bring awareness to the plight of their nation, Armenia. Not only that, but they're donating all proceeds from the music and merch to a fund set up for the soldiers fighting on their side. I mean, how many people knew of the Armenian genocide before a mainstream band like System of a Down started talking about it and infusing it in their songs? Yes, they can dip their toes into unrealistic, silly ideals. Why don't presidents fight the war? Why do they always send the poor? Sounds like something a college freshman would say after taking their first political science class. But it's obvious music and art for them is more than just entertainment. Unfortunately, the nature of change in politics is like steering a massive freight liner. The same stuff they sing about 25 years ago are still relevant today, just as is the case for NWA or Rage Against the Machine. On Toxicity, they were inspired by the protests at the 2000 Democratic National Convention in LA when mounted cops cleared thousands of protesters with a flurry of rubber bullets. Not being shy to the subject of police brutality and riots, with all four members growing up in LA, they wrote Deer Dance in response. The opening verse is one where it's hard to imagine any other band than System of a Down performing. They mix intense lyrical themes with a playful performance of wordplay, writing, "Circumventing circuses, lamenting in protest, to visible police, presence sponsored fear. Battalions of riot police with rubber bullet kisses, baton courtesy, service with a smile." In the chorus, they reference a riot that took place after a 2000 Rage Against the Machine concert at the Staples Center, also tying the symbol of LA's extravagant stadium to the people in surrounding impoverished neighborhoods. Beyond the Staples Center, you can see America with its tired poor avenging disgrace, peaceful loving youth against the brutality of plastic existence. In the chorus, they echo a statement very true and top of mind in America today, police brutality and mass protests. Pushing little children with their fully automatics, they like to push the weak around. On one hand, it can mean the recruitment of young people to fight in the military. On the other, though, it could mean the militarized riot police armed to the teeth up against young, exuberant, and sometimes naive protesters. Another example of the boldness of System of a Down is their opening track. Not a type of opening song you see on other albums that's saying, here's an easy listening opener to invite the masses in. Instead of trying to appeal to as many people as possible, it's a song rattling off statistics about the war on drugs in the US and the prison industrial complex. Through it all, another example of the immense challenge they undertook to educate listeners, but to also be catchy. Prison Song describes the divide between the rich and the poor in a striking way, just like Deer Dance, an issue that is still relevant today as it was in 2001 when they released it. The song opens with Serge whispering, they're trying to build a prison. In the first verse, Serge then outlines why the war on drugs started out of the civil rights movement in the 1960s with, following the rights movements, you clamped down with your iron fists. Drugs became conveniently available for all the kids. Serge says conveniently because it has since come out that the war on drugs was started by President Nixon to be able to imprison anti-war protesters and African Americans. The Nixon administration knew that if they associated drugs with those groups and clamped down on the drug aspect, they could get rid of their political opponents. In the pre-chorus, Darren chimes in on vocals, I buy my crack, my smack, my bitch, right here in Hollywood. Followed by Serge with statistics, nearly 2 million Americans are incarcerated in the prison system, a prison system of the US. In the second chorus, Serge mentions another stat, the percentage of Americans in the prison system, a prison system, has doubled since 1985. It's all about how the United States leads the world in the amount of people per capita that is locked up in prison, all for sometimes minor things like marijuana possession. System is stating the fact that when you privatize prisons, you make it their incentive to lock up more people, not to rehabilitate them or prevent them from going to jail, as they write in the chorus. They're trying to build a prison for you and me to live, another prison system for you and me. Then in the second verse, as if we need to unpack even more dense subjects, System tackles American imperialism and wars in the Middle East. They state how the average American taxpayer funds these wars, with Minor drug offenders fill your prisons, you don't even flinch. All our taxes paying for your wars against the new non-rich. And then later in the bridge, Serge screams passionately, all research and successful drug policy shows that treatment should be increased and law enforcement decreased, while abolishing mandatory minimum sentences, utilizing drugs to pay for secret wars around the world, drugs are now your global policy, now you police the globe. Yeah, how about that for an album opener? But System isn't just a socially and politically charged rock band. Rather, it's a band whose music seems designed to reflect on the world at large at a time when modern life has grown increasingly politicized. Looking back now to the early 2000s, before social media and the age of Trump, it can seem like a free and easy non-political utopia where politics weren't at the top of mind for everyone. But obviously, that wasn't the case. In 2001, guitarist Darren Malakian spoke in an interview about avoiding apathy at all costs, that they can't ignore what's going on in the world. But just because of that doesn't mean they're strictly a political band, saying, quote, reflecting the times is exactly what we're doing. Most artists now, and not just in music, have done a piece here and there about what's going on in the world. To me, that's no different than having a couple of timely songs on our records. It doesn't limit what we're all about. Serge talked about being labeled as a political band in an interview, saying, quote, I don't understand why we have to be just one thing. If I write on one side of this lampshade, the metropolis is too dense, it causes fear. That's a social statement. And then on this side, I write, blow me. And then here it says, I'm hungry. And here it says, gee, what a splendid day. Now those are four different things. We're all just turning the lampshade. Should I see the whole thing as political just because the first statement was political? If politics is one aspect of System of a Down and Toxicity as an album, well, provocation and controversy is certainly another side of that lampshade. The ninth track on the album is looking at the mind of one of the most reviled figures in American history, Charles Manson. But it wasn't the murder and other terrible things the cult leaders associated with that is the focus on the track Atwa. It was what they felt were good parts of Manson's message, his pro-environment stance. They're asking a simple philosophical question with the song, that at what point is it impossible to separate the message from the messenger? It's naive to think that even the most evil person in the world is simply evil for evil's sake, that there isn't anything you could take from them that could be positive. Can even the worst person in the world have a little bit of goodness within them? Charles Manson made famous the acronym ATWA, meaning air, trees, water, animals. He used it to name the forces of life he believed held the balance of the earth. He spread this message of environmentalism to his cult followers as they took flight from what they characterized as the madness of the cities. System of a Down wrote the song Atwa, not just on the environmental cause specifically, but as a look into Manson's perspective as a whole, almost like an attempt to empathize with the portrayed villain as he sat helpless in a jail cell for the rest of his life. They opened the first verse with, hey you, see me, pictures crazy. All the world I've seen before me passing by. I've got nothing to gain, to lose. All the world I've seen before me passing by. Of course, this all stemmed from the 1969 incident, where it was found Manson sent his cult followers to kill actress Sharon Tate and eight others, in which Manson was convicted of first-degree murder on multiple counts. Darren has said that the way Manson articulated his thoughts on our modern society had a big influence on him as an artist, and that his crimes shouldn't alter the views on his contribution to art, saying, quotes, I don't agree with killing anybody. I don't agree with going in and slashing anybody's throats or anything or writing shit on the walls. That's not what I'm into. That's not the side of Charles Manson that I'm into. It's more his ideas and his thoughts on society. In the second verse, they write about the reason people fear Manson so much. Hey, you or me, not so pretty. This stems from an interview with Manson where he gave his opinion on people's biases and ignorance, saying, quote, look down at me and you see a fool. Look up at me and you see a god. Look straight at me and you see yourself. In the chorus of the song, you get a contrast to the soft, more morose sounding verses. From the vantage point of Manson's, it's like the verses are a more measured look at his present situation in prison, while the chorus is the side the general public sees of him in interviews. This man angered by being in prison his whole life and for being portrayed as evil, as they write in the chorus. You don't care about how I feel. I don't feel there anymore. You don't care about how I feel. I don't feel there anymore. Serge has said that in a sense, Charles Manson the man doesn't exist anymore. It's a trick the media plays over and over again, oversimplifying these situations, replacing Manson by the symbol, saying, quote, "There's also a point that it makes for me somehow is the lust for sensationalism in media. And it's not just Charles Manson, obviously. It's like when we take pictures, photographers go, okay, get mad, or let me see those eyes." Upon Manson's death in 2017, Malakian took to Instagram to compare him to O.J. Simpson, saying O.J. killed his wife, which is horrible, but you can't deny the fact that he was one of the best football players in history, saying, quote, "They can do that with you. They can find an angry moment, put you on the thing, and make you the scariest person in the whole country, just because of what they write next to you." You could also go the other way with it. It has come out that Martin Luther King was likely a womanizer and cheated on his wife, but does that take away his massive contribution as the leader of the civil rights movement? Of course, System of a Down was criticized for trying to empathize with a cult leader who had his hand in mass murder. Some people looked at Darren and Serge's viewpoint as an oversimplification themselves, that in fact Manson's environmental stance was just an altruistic prop to help brainwash his followers to look at him as good, and that his main drive was to have his followers at his disposal to do what he desired. Regardless, you can't ignore the fact that System of a Down is employing a bigger overarching philosophical theme with Atwa, the fact that even the worst person in the world has a bit of goodness. Maybe we shouldn't be so quick to throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. Maybe we shouldn't be surprised that when a man is looked at as pure evil, he becomes apathetic, as they write in Atwa's outro. "I don't sleep anymore. I don't eat anymore. I don't live anymore. I don't feel anymore." With the release of System of a Down's self-titled debut in 1998, a lot of the groundwork had already been done. They were a buzz band, rapidly gaining attention and steadily moving to bigger venues, and by the time of Toxicity, their growing army of fans was keen to hear what they'd do next. The first album was written roughly over the previous 8 years, while they had day jobs and other life distractions. They had time to nurture their artistic output while they slowly gained fandom. And so Toxicity was another animal. It's that famous quote regarding musicians: "You got your whole life to make your first album, and then a few months to make your second." The sophomore slump is a real thing. And as Chavo said in an interview, they were well aware of that going into the recording process, saying, quote, "The pressure was on, but Darren had a lot of songs written and I had some songs, and we were just ready to get in there and make another record. It was exciting because with the first record, we didn't overproduce it. We made more of a punk rock recording, and you can tell with the difference of the recording. But we did that so we'd have somewhere to go with the second one and the third one. We were looking forward to getting in there and using more of the board, doing more guitar tracks, you know? And we spent more time in the studio with Toxicity than we did with the first one." In pre-production alone, the band wrote 35 songs that would eventually be spread out between Toxicity and 2002's Steal This album. They didn't argue too much over the musical direction of Toxicity. They had a big group to choose from and largely chose the best group that fit together. But deliberately, they went in more of a melodic direction compared to the first album. There's more dynamics between really heavy thrash parts into beautiful vocal melodies, something that wasn't as common on their debut. And that leads us to the 12th track on the album, the second single that shares the album's name, Toxicity. It's mostly known for its unique frantic chorus, led with John's interesting drum fills, but also more softer verses with Darren's picking guitar and Serge's whispering melody. The lyrics, at least to start off the song, seem to be about attention deficit disorder, also known as ADD. System of a Down is criticizing how the psychological condition is now overprescribed to children and how it leads to numbness in the kids. The song opens with a metaphor of how these children become programmed like software when taking these pills, leading to a calmness, but a lack of stillness and focus, with conversion software version 7.0, looking at life through the eyes of a tire hub, eating seeds as a pastime activity, the toxicity of our city, of our city. These children become so accustomed to the pills, it feels as regular as snacking on sunflower seeds. It's a quick and easy way for parents and doctors to settle kids down and to control them. System of a Down uses toxicity as a metaphor for these pills poisoning the children, but also the toxicity of media and propaganda used by corporations and governments to distract and influence. It's their method of claiming a perceived ownership over a part of the world, as they write in the chorus. You, what do you own the world? How do you own disorder? Disorder. Now somewhere between the sacred silence and sleep. Somewhere between the sacred silence and sleep, disorder, disorder, disorder. Somewhere between silence and sleep could be the state of being medicated, allowing yourself to pass through life in a fog of ignorance of your true potential. Whether you're a single kid or a member of the mass public, you're having this medication pushed on you to fix what external forces call a disorder. In the second chorus, anger is mentioned as the fuel that these corporations and governments use to feed the fires of distraction. More wood for their fires, loud neighbors, flashlight reveries caught in the headlights of a truck, eating seeds as a pastime activity, the toxicity of our city, of our city. The loud neighbors is a metaphor for the media always portraying violence and destruction, and its use as propaganda to get people angry at each other instead of at the corporations and governments who are the puppet masters behind the scenes. The flashlight reveries are daydreams and imaginations of a better life, but those ideals are stifled by headlights of a truck, a metaphor for reality. The song's outro features the line, "When I became the sun, I shone life into the man's hearts." It could be a reference to some sort of big brother-like dictator who becomes like the sun, always watching people, and also perceived in the good sense of the sun as the provider of energy and light to their people. John talked about the musical side of the song in an interview, saying, quote, "Toxicity was one of those songs where we hadn't done anything like it before. It required something completely different than any other system song did. The guitars are just, in some ways, really powerful, and in others, they just step back so that the melody can take over a little bit. So it's a really good combination of aggression and melodic elements, which represents this album." Toxicity as a single peaked at number 70 on the Billboard Hot 100, was ranked number 14 on VH1's 40 Greatest Metal Songs, and made number 53 on the Y2K Rock's Top 200 Songs of the Century. The video was the first one directed by bassist Shavo. Like their video for Chop Suey, Toxicity showed the band performing on a small stage surrounded by fans who go crazy when the band gets to the rave-up section. Shavo explained in an interview, quote, "The universe is the sacred silence and sleep, and the kids are the disorder. So how do you control the disorder in that universe? You can't. To me, that's toxicity." Yes, toxicity is a little bit of the guys putting on their tinfoil hats, looking at world governments and corporations in a cynical light. It's also very complicated and can mean a host of other things. Rick Rubin had a good answer when asked about the song, saying, quote, "I don't know what it means, but I know how it makes me feel. It's like a lot of Neil Young songs, where the lyrics don't necessarily make sense, but they give you this feeling of something going on. This does that." The band felt the metaphor of toxicity could be an overarching theme to the album as a whole, and not just the song. The toxicity of the music industry, of religion, drugs, corruption, or any number of things they feel poison people. Following its release, Shavo even talked about the toxicity of their hometown in Los Angeles, the contradiction of its perception as opposed to reality, saying, quote, "Everyone views Hollywood as a glamorous place with palm trees and movie stars, but when we were growing up, all we saw were poverty, hookers, and bad stuff. It's an evil town, a toxic city, which is how we got the name of our record." Los Angeles and Hollywood epitomizes the consumeristic culture of the West, the toxicity of a focus on the individual, not as a collective of the human race. Something that has its pros and its cons. And that's the focus on System of a Down's third and final single off the album, the last track on the listing, Aerials. The overall theme to the song is deep. It's about human race as a whole, how we forget what's really important in the grand scheme of things and the cosmos, and our tiny part in it. We're so caught up in consumerism and capitalism, looking out for our own best interests, we forget that at the end of the day, we're just part of the circle of life. The first verse starts with, "Life is a waterfall, we're one in the river and one again after the fall. Before life, we're all part of the calm and peaceful river. Then we are born and live through the chaotic waterfall until its inevitable end, which reunites everyone in death as we were before life. We all start the same and end up the same, one with everything." The verse continues with, "Swimming through the void, we hear the word, we lose ourselves, but we find it all. We go through life making mistakes and learning lessons, yet a lot of us ignore searching for who we truly are instead giving into the temptation of a synthetic, shallow lifestyle. It continues, because we are the ones that want to play, always want to go, but you never want to stay. And we are the ones that want to choose, always want to play, but you never want to lose. That synthetic keeping up with the Joneses lifestyle is something we seek our whole life, but once we get what we strive for, we move on. It's a continuous cycle because it never satisfies. The second verse opens with, "Life is a waterfall. We drink from the river, then we turn around and put up our walls. We selfishly take and take all that we can get for ourselves and don't look out for our fellow humans when they're in need." The chorus then highlights the overarching message. "Aerials in the sky, when you lose small mind, you free your life. Aerials so up high, when you free your eyes, eternal prize." Aerials meaning an antenna. Once you stop and can tap into a full picture of your life as it relates to all human existence in the universe, just as an antenna in the sky has a better perspective on the earth as a whole, the weight of all mundane day-to-day issues comes off your back. It's true freedom. It's overcoming the toxicity of our consumeristic culture, overcoming the identity our ego has attached to, so that we're free by understanding our place in the waterfall, accepting it will come to an end. Over a year after the release of the album, Aerials hit number one on both the Billboard Alternative Songs and Mainstream Rock chart. It was the band's first number one hit, reflecting the wide cross-section of radio stations that played the song. The riffs are satisfying, the drums are intense, and the harmonies of Serge and Darren's singing gives the song an accessibility to the mainstream. John said in an interview, quote, "It's a gentle song, but at the same time, it has a lot of angst coming out. It was one of those things where it was just instant. We all felt it. It came together real fast, like it was meant to be put together that day." The music video got a lot of play on MTV and was a joint effort between Chavo and British director David Slade. It follows a young boy who appears to be at least part Klingon from the Star Trek universe. It seems to be a take on the Hollywood culture as we see the boy in a photo shoot in a press junket, but he seems to be looked at as a celebrity rather than a curiosity. Altogether, it's deep stuff and quite stoic on an album that also features the lyrics jump, pogo, 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 bounce, pogo, 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 an analogy of a pogo stick to the motion you make in an orgy. But that's part of the charm of System of a Down. They're just not taking themselves too seriously. Toxicity was released on September 4th, 2001, a day after the riot they caused in LA. The album debuted at number one on the Billboard album charts, with 220,000 copies sold in its first week of release. To date, the record has gone triple platinum in the US and sold more than 12 million copies worldwide. It remains System of a Down's most popular album and one of the most offbeat and original multi-platinum metal releases of all time. Like System's debut album, Toxicity seemed utterly chaotic upon its first listen, but the small refinements of more melody, among many other things, helped it become more accessible and gain mainstream attention. Not even the events of 9/11 and having Chop Suey ripped from radio playlists could tear it from the airwaves. People were attracted to their distinct style of fun, interesting guitar riffs. Serge's Swift's army knife vocals on top of Darren's strange singing, the fun and unconventional drumming, and the diversity of their songs. They managed to get more popular over time without giving the feeling like they were selling out. Also, their politics weren't so overt that it distanced certain listeners. They still had political songs, but they did so in a way that was more surreal, adventurous, and musically accomplished without sacrificing any of the heaviness or intensity that got them signed to a record deal. Toxicity provided a perfect soundtrack to post-9/11 anxiety. Even in the songs I didn't talk about, the overarching theme of toxicity in drug addiction that you hear in Needles and Psycho, of overpopulation in X, of the egos of scientists and science, or of mind control and Shimmy, and even referencing something they'd focus more on later in their career, both in and away from their music, their Armenian heritage. The album closer is listed as Aerials, but in fact is a hidden song called Arto, an adaptation of a traditional Armenian church hymn. As impressive as the writing and performances on Toxicity are, the turbulence in the music reflected the tension that existed within the band as it strived to complete the album under a tight deadline. In an interview, Darren talked about a conflict boiling over, but also bringing them closer together, saying, quote, "There were times when we fucking threw down. Once John and I were totally going at it. My lip was all cut up, and I took a microphone stand and hit him across the head, and his head was all bashed in. Chavo and Serge were looking at us and saying, "Aw, man, we're done." But right after we fought, we took each other to the hospital and got stitched up right next to each other. Both of us were sitting there laughing, saying, "This is one of the coolest moments in the history of our band." System, in a lot of ways, had a contradictory sound. It can sound both incredibly juvenile and surprisingly mature, which leaks in the lyrics as well. As Darren said in an interview, we like to stay on that verse-chorus type of tradition, except sometimes the verse will be a waltz and the chorus will be hardcore. How many popular bands can say that waltz is a component of their music? They didn't follow the so-called rules of heavy metal. No one before sounded like System of a Down, and no one really since. But as Rick Rubin said, they transcended not fitting in. And those are the best artists. Those are the revolutionary bands. And those are the ones that change the world. Hey guys, thanks for listening. If you'd like to keep up to date with everything I got going on with this channel, be sure to follow my Instagram page. Also, I do have a YouTube channel where I condense individual stories from my podcast into short video form. So please like and subscribe on there as well. Thanks again.